am sponsoring my episode today. Yes, you heard me right. Imagine you start your own shop. You sell a product you've crafted with all your heart. Sales start, one piece a week, but over months and years they grow. Then one day you arrive at your shop and it's full of customers. Well, that's how I imagine my podcast growing with listeners. Since I don't have a physical product to sell, there's no price tag on listening. Stay tuned until the end of the episode. I will share how you can help me keep growing. This will let me keep creating stories and offering this platform for more guests to share theirs. Welcome to the Life Affairs Podcast. This is a place where we share life experiences and the many lessons learned by just living. Join me to immerse ourselves and take a closer look at the stories that shaped and defined us. Just remember, there's no judgment and a lot of understanding on today's episode of the Life Affairs Podcast. A few months ago, I attended a live theater show for the podcast Feldherren. The English translation of the podcast name is Field Lords. During the show, I found myself seated uncomfortably in a balcony seat. I felt cramped due to the limited leg space, never mind that I already have short legs. The stage is to my left. It means I have to turn my upper body towards the speakers. I do not recommend this seat. Despite the discomfort, I am eager to understand the purpose of the show. This specific live theater show focuses on answering listeners' questions. The questions are about the war in the Ukraine, what it means to Europe and to the world. The speakers have expertise and experience. The gathered audience vary from students to middle-aged people and retirees. They are mostly white Dutch citizens. They know about war from their parents and grandparents' World War II stories, and others from more curiosity and research. The podcast, Feldherren, is presented by Peter van Oom and Mart de Kruijf, both retired generals. They explain in details how war works. They focus on military issues, geopolitics, and international security. Mart de Kruijf served as Lieutenant General in the Dutch Army and was the commander of the Royal Netherlands Army. Peter van Oom served as a general and was the highest-ranking military officer in the Netherlands, the Chief of Defense. These two top military figures in the Netherlands talk about the biggest war in Europe since 1945. They discuss the war in Ukraine and its implications for Europe and the world. Additionally, they cover some military perspectives on the conflict in Gaza. To my surprise, many questions from the audience focus on what steps to take if war starts in Europe. They also ask how people could live and survive in their daily lives in such times. Though I trusted the experts' answers on stage, I am anxious. And I'm hesitant to share my own experiences. I feel intimidated by the mostly white male audience. They exude an air of privilege and opulence in their attire. While I am sinking in my anxiety, I'm answering silently in my head their questions. The heck I am! I'm even creating a story. And my war survival tips to them would go like this. Let's begin the survival trip with a crucial aspect that can significantly impact our life during times of war. Getting to know our neighbors. Building relationships with those around us, including local store employees, is essential. Talking with others fosters understanding and support. These are vital for survival in hard times. Knowing our neighbors' circumstances is crucial. This includes health issues and caregiving duties. It's important for community resilience. Unity and cooperation among neighbors prevent discord. This is smart during crisis. From my experience, no one wants to enter in a conflict with his next-door neighbor in times of war. It is dangerous because it can get us killed or kidnapped. So do not hesitate to talk about these things with the parents of your children's best friends or with the parents from the football team when they practice. The bigger the network of connection is, the bigger the chance to be strong and safe. And as much as we want to protect our children from bad news, we must teach them emergency procedures to help keep themselves safe. So does making support networks with other families. These matters will boost readiness and resilience in our children too. Also, keeping important documents like passports, cash money, and emergency papers that is easy to find and grab is vital. Think of it like the emergency hospital bag that a pregnant woman would have ready at her front door to grab and go. I tell you, my parents have secured such a briefcase with our important documents. It includes names of trusted people, phone numbers and addresses. Mom and Dad gathered more personal documents in the suitcase. They include birth certificates, identity cards. My mother, bless her heart, also includes a few cherished family photos. This briefcase accompanies us wherever we go, from one shelter to another. At a certain moment, and when we realized this war is going to last longer, my parents, along with six other families, choose to seek refuge and settle in one place. We choose one of the largest apartments in our building owned by one allied neighbor. This apartment is on the ground floor. The building's core surrounds it, including staircase and walls leading to other units. From an engineering standpoint, this apartment appears to be the safest option. Yet, this precaution is not enough. We find the need to further fortify our refuge. So all the men work together to get hundreds of sandbags for use as window barriers. Once stacked, they ensure windows have good ventilation. This will prevent glass shattering in an explosion. The end result of covering the windows makes the place dark, but it is a necessity. The darkness in times of war takes all hopes away, so we make sure to have enough candles on hand. And to our happiness, my father, skilled in electronics, he uses multiple car batteries and cables to generate electricity. He connects them in a circuit to power fuel lamps. This reduces our reliance on candles. It is an extra method to help us save on candles for the harder days. If you listened to previous episodes, you would know that I describe my father, the lookalike of Pablo Escobar. And talking about him making electricity makes me even understand more why every man wants to be him and every woman wants to flirt with him. But then, while the men are taking care of building the sand walls, I remember the women, busy stocking up on enough baking flour to make our own bread. The scarcity on bread, because bakeries are shut down, create unrest. We Lebanese eat bread as much as we drink water. Let me tell you how we used to secure more bread loaves than we were allowed. During shortages, bakeries that are still open have limited supplies. Each family is allowed just one loaf. Lebanese people are good at finding loopholes. So we adopt a strategy. Waking up at 5 a.m. to queue for bread with our neighbors. We are acquainted, but we pretend to be strangers. My father is just another person in the line, and my neighbor is a mere stranger. To add some fun, we sometimes start arguments. who even have playful scuffles while waiting. It is all in good fun to pass the time. And a minute later, we would stand and shiver when the militia trucks arrive to break our organized lines and take away the bread we have been waiting for. In these times, we excuse their cruelty, thinking they must eat to be able to continue defending us. Looking back, in the 70s and 80s, life is less sophisticated, and no one talks about sustainability. Lucky for us, huh? Our stoves are on gas. It is easy to cook at all times, as long as we have a gas canister connected to it. We also stock many canned foods. They range from corned beef to hot dogs, tuna, kidney beans, green beans. We have plenty of rice, burghul, and a variety of canned vegetables on hand. And my mother, a very attent woman, never forgets to include Maria biscuits and Zigzag chocolate. This is the Lebanese version of Kit Kat. She also gets my favorite chocolate wafers. I couldn't get enough of these delicious treats while staring at the candlelight for hours. I mean, there was nothing else to do but staring at the candle. Now thinking of it, I cannot believe we had all this food. I do remember that we never ran out of food, but getting it was hard due to danger outside. If war breaks out in Europe, we would need to unite. We must ensure our community has enough food. Now, what about water? All the supplies are meaningless without access to water. Drinkable water was nowhere to be found for days and sometimes weeks. Our solution is to fill empty whiskey bottles. We used bottles of Whiskey Grant, Johnny Walker, Famous Grouse. I am grateful all men enjoyed a sip or 10 from these whiskies in their long nights. They sat there as the guardians of the galaxy watching over us, the children and the women as we sleep. So, we filled the bottles with boiled water. After leaving the water to sit in the sun for 2 days, it becomes safe to drink. Over time, we acquired special filters bottles. They ensure a more reliable supply of clean water. And who says you can't build a water filter business during times of war? As for the upcoming recommendation, I would say in 2024, it can be an outdated one. Today, I drive an electric car, as do many others of you. But even if we still drive diesel or gasoline cars, the refueling system changed. In the 80s, we would draw off gasoline from one car into the fuel tank of another car using a piece of hose. I remember being a passenger with 10 jerry cans in the cars with my friends. It is fun. It is quite exhilarating. We would gather at the fuel station or the location tipped off by our insider. There, we could extract gasoline from unused or damaged cars. Mike, our elder companion, he expertly moved the fuel from one vehicle to another. It can also get very cold, just like in Europe. We have not forget to stock up on warm blankets, cozy socks, and enough beanies to keep our heads warm. Most of the warm blankets, we received them in a package from the UNICEF. I remember my mom's feeling of triumph having scored such a goodie box. We also had a big salad plate placed on the large coffee table, overloaded with lighters and matches. It is resting in peace next to the other salad plate filled with packs of Marlboro, Winston, and Lucky Strike. It seems back then, cigarettes and whiskey were among the essential stocking for the long days and nights of war. Practical survival items are not the only important thing to do. Among them, we also cherish the decks of playing cards, books to read, and board games to play. These simple pleasures keep us, children and teenagers alike, entertained day after day. We become champions at card games and backgammon. I am sure we broke world records playing Sabaunos. It's a children's version of a poker game. We played it endless nights under the twinkling light of one candle in the middle of the table. In the grim times, we also share many laughs over silly moments, all together, grown-ups and children. I have two memories. They stand out for me, and I love to tell you about them. One evening, it's pitch dark outside and inside. Not even the moonlight is shining. Bombs are falling around us, and our supply of candles is running low. We are in our neighbor's safe house. We grow bored and decide to make Lebanese coffee for all 20 gathered people. We see it as a treat for them looking after us. I offered to go with my neighbor Zelfa to the kitchen so she wouldn't be alone. At the age of 13, I think I'm tough, but bear with me as I will tell you the truth about my toughness in a minute. So I walk in the darkness with Zelfa in the direction of the kitchen. In a flash, my sister's face appears before me. It is lit by a single candle. She asks me in a spooky voice, this line, she took it from Agatha Christie's novel, and then there were none. It makes me scream hysterically and flee in horror to my mother. I am lamenting my sister's prank. Until the day of today, my sister finds it amusing. As for me, it's another bitchy act on her side. I still do not smile recalling it. On another occasion, as night falls, we all settle in for sleep. We're scattered throughout the house. Because I'm small, I sleep on a narrow folding camping bed. It's in the middle of a long hallway at the house entrance. The boys had gone out to fight, and no one knows when they would return. Unexpectedly, the front door of the apartment silently gets open. A fighter, one of our allied families, stumbles inside. He's exhausted. Unaware that it is occupied, he collapses onto the nearest bed at the entrance, right on me. Thankfully, he notices me before I suffocate beneath him. The next day, I am so embarrassed by the incident that I avoid him for the rest of my life. And surely, before I forget, never underestimate one important weapon in the darkest abyss and largest cosmos, the flashlight. Each person needs several flashlights in their pocket and around the house. Here's another anecdote about flashlights. One evening, it is quiet. No bombing, no rifle shootings. My parents are still in the safe house. And my brother and I are longing to sleep in our beds and watch TV. After getting my parents' permission, we go to our apartment. My brother and I, after all, we decide to watch TV in the living room. We are scared to be alone in our beds. Each of us lying on a couch, and in front of the couches, there is the coffee table. And above this coffee table, we swear a pact. My brother. Roro, I will put the flashlight here on the table. When we hear the first bomb sounds coming in or going out, we grab it and go to the safe house. I answer him. Akid, matat alham khaye. I got your back. I will do as you instructed me. We are excited to watch our rented videotape. My brother and I love Jackie Chan movies, especially the early ones from China. This time, we rented Drunken Master. We are smiling in anticipation of the funny scenes when suddenly we hear a bomb landing. We jump off the couch completely startled. Both my brother and I want to grab the flashlight, so we bump into each other. We hit our legs on the coffee table. After helping each other up, we run quickly to the safe house, screaming from pain. When we arrive, our parents look at us horrified. They think we are a casualty of the bombing. The lesson learned from this is to remove obstacles that could injure you when trying to flee for your life. My story is true. The many times we ran for our lives are true. And it may not resonate with you or even with me today. Yet, it's important to never forget that munitions nowadays are far beyond what we imagined in the 80s. But the humanitarian aspect remains the same. If we stick together and support each other, we should achieve higher security. We must do this by caring for each other's lives. But from what I see of Israel's actions in Gaza, I fear that if this is how war will be in Europe, we will die of hunger. Because this is the reality these days. In the Ukraine, those in areas affected by ongoing war suffer. The soldiers, they lack food, water, and medicine. Living in a city during wartime is like the stories in The Walking Dead or The Last of Us. I encourage you to watch these shows. They reveal the challenges and triumphs of people in hard times. Human depravity highlights the dark side of human nature in crisis. But it also shows the power of community. My family, my neighbors and I would not have survived the war without the strong bond we built and united together, acting in our collective survival's best interest. And this last part is what the Feldherren exhibit in their episodes. Two military experts who know about real wars, they believe that we must behave better as a human being to make the future safe after the war ends. So here I am, still in the theater, and this uncomfortable seat is killing me. I'm looking around me, and I see the cubic microphone thrown all over the theater hall. And I see people grabbing it and asking questions. I also see Mart and Peter move their lips answering them. But I don't hear their voices. I don't hear their noises. I am lost in my head. Soon, I will be moving to a new city and a new house in the Netherlands. I must get to know my neighbors before it's too late. I have to check on my canned food supply. I know I keep them stocked somewhere in the house. I want to refill the expired ones. Do I have enough baking flour? Should I start testing my skill in making bread at home using the camping stove? And I look at my right. My husband, sitting next to me. Looks like he is also cramped in his seat. His legs must be hurting even more than mine. Well, he's not much taller than me. We both are not white Dutch people. Yet, this seat is the same as mine. And I wonder, does he know how to siphon gasoline from a car? And would he learn how to make light bulbs work from our electric car? We must buy a car on gasoline. In the meantime, I am glad we have his motorcycle battery. I mean, if he can do it, this could actually be very sexy. My head is spinning. I'm still in the theater. My thoughts are going from war survival kits to emotional, loving feelings to my husband. This chaos in my head shook me from my daydreaming and brought me back into hearing the voices in the theater show. I look at Mart de Kruijf and Peter van Oom and appreciate every word they are saying. I am also thankful to the two military experts sharing safety and caring messages on what war will mean to Europe and the rest of the world if it happens today. The show ends, and I walk out with the crowd. They are much taller than me. they don't look like me. And I wish I can get to know them all so we can be a community. After all, our presence in the theater is our togetherness, no matter what color we are or what societal class we come from. I am so grateful to have survived the war and made it to live here in the Netherlands. This is my adoptive country, and I am pouring my hopes and desperation in it. And if duty calls, I will even fight for it. I am grateful for my podcast, where I'm safe to share my stories. If you're listening, it means I'm comfortable sharing them with you. Would you like to support me? It's quite simple, and I appreciate it. All you have to do is rate my podcast with 5 stars and leave a review on your podcast app. Reviewing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or Podimo helps. Every review increases my podcast visibility to listeners. It is as simple as that. More stars and reviews result in more visibility. With your support, I can attract sponsors. They can help fund the podcast's growth. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with your friends and family and ask them to subscribe. Leaving a rating and review on platforms like Apple Podcasts can also help boost the podcast's ranking. Your support through word of mouth is greatly appreciated. If you feel I'm encouraging you to tell your story, contact me on rula@thelifeaffairspodcast.com. You will see my email in the show notes. I'll see you next time.